So it's a pleasure to be here. It's also, as Juan Carlos said, both an honor and I think an opportunity to be part of the San Diego Consortium for Regenerative Medicine. I look forward to being part of this great endeavor. I think it's a huge opportunity for all of us here. I'm going to tell you about our work to try to find new sources for cardiomyocytes. As you all know, heart disease or heart failure in particular is to a large extent due to the loss of cardiomyocytes following injury. This leads to just a debilitating decline in the heart and eventually failure. You can imagine several sources to replace new myocytes, from mature cardiomyocytes. You could imagine replacement from precursor cells within the heart. Now, if I can figure out how this works. Oh, this is easier. Some precursor cells or stem cells that might be resident within the heart. And of course, you can think of embryonic stem cells. Now, mature myocytes, I think we to a large extent have to remove from this picture. Mature cardiomyocytes do not divide. It's very unlikely that we could stimulate them to re-enter the cell cycle, although that's something we could come back to at the very end of my talk. But I think it's more plausible to consider regeneration from precursor progenitor cells or stem cells within the adult heart. That would be a tremendous goal, especially if we could come up with a pharmaceutical therapy. And then secondly, I think repair from exogenous sources like embryonic stem cells offer tremendous promise, certainly in perhaps nearer term. So our laboratory has focused on these problems. In particular, we're interested, if we can get the pointer to work again. On inducing cells, either adult stem cells or embryonic stem cells, to enter into this differentiation program. Once you commit cells to the lineage, it's a very important problem is the replication of these cells. And then, of course, there are the associated problems of trying to deliver them and make sure that they survive once they're implanted and functionally integrate. So we've been working predominantly in this space here, in this area. There are other people on the mesa, especially over in cardiology in the Department of Medicine, that are interested in delivery problems. People in the bioengineering department at UCSD are interested in producing also materials that would allow these cells to survive and integrate once they are delivered to the heart. So this is, as you can imagine, along a continuum from the point of making the cells in the first place, getting enough of them in the second place, and getting them to become integrated finally. And so this is a problem that takes basic scientists all the way through engineers and physiologists down into people who have expertise in the preclinical animal models. So I'm not going to go through a lot of data, but I will tell you about where much of the background comes from that underlies, or the theory that underlies, our ability to regenerate myocytes. And a lot of this has come from a couple decades of embryology work with organisms such as the frog, where you can take tissue, you can do assays like taking non-cardiac tissue. Normally the heart forms, say, here and here at a 1,000 cell stage embryo, of course develop into a much more complicated structure, as you saw here. You can program non-heart tissue to become heart, and this makes for a wonderful assay. Over the years, we and others have taken advantage of these types of experiments in frogs, but not only in frogs, but also in fish and in chicks. People like Juan Carlos have been doing this in fish. And you can assay molecules that could take non-heart tissue and eventually lead to the production of a pretty good heart. So through these types of experiments, we now appreciate that there are a number of signals that are needed to go from mesoderm, the stuff that makes all muscle and blood and endothelial cells, heart, among other tissues in the body, take it down this program to make cardiac mesoderm. And in particular, my lab has been working in this area up here where we've shown that you need signals from the TGF-beta family member nodal, and you need to block Wnt signaling with molecules such as DICOF1. And that works through a homeodomain protein, HEX. Before this time, you need Wnt signaling here. You also need Wnt signaling later. So what I'd like to illustrate from this is that you need some signals like Wnt early. Then there's a period when you need to turn off certain signals like Wnt, turn on other signals. And then you have to change over again and turn on signals that you didn't need beforehand. So you have to give, if you want to take a stem cell to, and this will be true for brain cells or pancreas cells, through a developmental program, you're going to have to provide the signals that at an appropriate time windows and give signals, take signals away, give other signals at other times. So you just can't take an embryonic stem cell, for instance, and put it into a diseased organ. You'll likely generate a tumor. And the diseased organ is unlikely to provide the signals that it takes to drive the tissue for the cells forward, because after all, these are cells that resemble very early embryonic cells and not cells in the adult animal. So you probably need to provide at least a first approximation, a recapitulation of development. So in order to try to find additional signals or better molecules for drive differentiation in a biotech setting, or perhaps even lead to drugs to direct endogenous cells forward, we've begun to take advantage of high-throughput screening to look for both focused assays for molecules that activate pathways that we already know are involved in cardiogenesis, and then secondly, unbiased screens for molecules that will teach us about new pathways, pathways we might not know anything about. And we've set up assays along the second line for cardiomyocyte induction. We're working on assays for taking mesoderm specifically to cardiogenic, a very small step that we know very little about, and also molecules that will probe the cell cycle regulation. We're also working with colleagues at UCSD in Burnham, Dr. Fred Levine's lab in particular, to develop assays for beta cell applications. And this is all consolidated into a collaborative program that we call the San Diego Center for Chemical Genomics at the Burnham Institute that involves also people at the Torrey Pines Institute and the Human Biomolecular Research Institute, as well as UCSD. So to do these screens, we've taken advantage of the ability to put fluorescent proteins under control of tissue-specific or temporal-specific promoters. We have ones for stem cells. Juan Carlos's lab has provided us others for intermediate stages. And then we have, of course, cardiomyocyte assays. So what I'm going to tell you about in the next couple slides is just a very crude assay that's begun to yield molecules using this cell line here as the readout. So basically, we put these cells in a dish. We stimulate them with a panel, a large library of molecules, one at a time into each well, and you look for molecules that can push the cells forward to turn on the green fluorescent protein. And we've done this, and we've gotten a number of classes of molecules. Some illustrations are shown here. And very gratifying to me is that they work at slightly different stages of development, so that we have some classes that work early on and some classes that seem to be working a little bit later stages. So these screens are just beginning to yield interesting results, and there's an awful lot of work to do now, and especially hopefully now with the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine behind us, to scale up these projects and adapt them to human embryonic stem cells. At the end of the day, what we'd love to have would be molecules that could take cells from a stem or progenitor state and drive them through in a stepwise way the program that leads to ventricular cardiomyocytes, the cells we eventually would like to replace. Most therapies, as an aside, that are in clinic now for trying to cell-based therapies to ameliorate the debilitating effects of heart failure do not even attempt to regenerate cardiomyocytes. These therapies are largely effective if at producing molecules that can perhaps stave off the decline, or if any regeneration goes on, regenerate endothelial cells within the heart. And that's certainly a very valuable thing to do. But the therapies are not really intended, nor are they likely to regenerate new myocytes from the cells that are transplanted. So I think what we want to do here is be able to come up with a cocktail or a regimen to produce new myocytes from some sort of stem cell. Okay. So we're taking these molecules forward with collaborations with chemists to try to optimize the molecules, improve upon them, and then very importantly, understand how they work with colleagues here at the Salk and at UCSD, Juan Carlos and Shankar Subramaniam. And then onward to human embryonic stem cells with the support of CIRM. So I'd like to spend a couple minutes now and switch and talk about the second area we're focusing on, and that is how to make more of the cells once we produce them. So we've been focusing on a natural pathway, the Notch pathway, that we think might possibly affect the replication of cardiac stem cells or cardiac precursors or committed cells, even those within the heart. And a lot of this is based, again, on the embryology. We and others have noticed that the Notch protein, this is a view of this heart. This is the outside of a developing fetal heart, and this is moving inwards into the chamber here. And so this is what we call the compact layer, and this is what we call the trabeculated layer. And so the cavity of the heart would be somewhere over here, and I'm just showing a section through the wall. This is where Notch, the protein, the receptor, is expressed, and the ligand, as you can see, seems to have a complementary gradient of expression. It's a transmembrane ligand and a transmembrane receptor. And we have additional evidence that the protein is activated in here. In fact, if you look, this is an antibody for the part of the protein that can make its way eventually into the nucleus, and you can see there are speckles of the protein located within the nucleus, indicative of activation, but we can see downstream markers as well. So this Notch is often known for stimulating the replication of progenitor cells in a number of settings. But one thing we've noticed is that fetal myocytes, we're not the only ones to notice this, fetal myocytes replicate tremendously during fetal development as the heart grows in the embryo. Yet human embryonic stem cell-derived myocytes or mouse ES-derived myocytes don't replicate more than a couple times when you place them in the dish, making us think maybe we've removed them from the Notch signal or somehow shut down that signaling. So in an attempt to sustain the signaling, we expressed the activated form of the Notch receptor. That's the part that gets cut and goes into the nucleus that I alluded to before. In embryonic stem cell-derived myocytes, specifically from a myocyte promoter. So normally, without it, you can see that there are no green nuclei in all these red cardiomyocytes. The green nuclei are indicative of cells that are going through cell cycle. However, if you express this activated form of the Notch receptor, you can see abundant green nuclei in the myocytes. In fact, these are balls of myocytes that continue to grow for a while. So this is emboldened by this. We think that this could be an interesting way to stimulate more myocytes. We'd love to look for small molecule agonists of this pathway, and we are in collaboration with people in San Francisco. But we wanted to also know the mechanism of how this works. So one thing we've noticed is that if you look at cyclin D, which is a protein very important for cell cycle in many settings, and in particular in cardiomyocytes, you can see that in the presence of the activated Notch, the cyclin D in green here is localized to the nucleus. If you activate cyclin D by a number of transcriptional ways just to activate the gene, okay, including a molecule downstream of Notch, that you get cyclin D in the cytoplasm here, but not in the nucleus in these characteristic spots. So that suggests to us that Notch has a unique role in stimulating the entry of cyclin D into the nucleus. Not only does it work in its transcription factor function to induce cyclin D gene expression, making the protein, but it also gets that protein into the nucleus where it can then initiate cell cycle. And to see how this we think this plays out is that Notch might keep cells in a replicative stage to support the large the growth of the heart during fetal development. And we speculate that in the adult, maybe, just maybe, it might support a niche for endogenous stem or progenitor cells. And this is being evaluated through a series of conditional mouse knockouts right now, in collaboration with a number of people here on the Mesa. And then, of course, what we'd like to do would be to evaluate whether these Notch-stimulated cells will work in transplant models of heart disease. So I'd like to close there and thank a number of the collaborators. And in particular, I acknowledge Victor Campa, a postdoc in the lab who returned to Spain a few months ago. He did much of that Notch and cell cycling work. And then I'd like to, the chemical biology is largely the work of Paul Bushway and Joaquim Teixeira, two UCSD students in the laboratory, with the help of a tremendous number of collaborators at Burnham and other institutions on the Mesa in the San Diego Center for Chemical Genomics. So I'll stop there. Thank you. So that's an interesting, good question. If you were to think about a transplant therapy and you were going to try to inject the cells into the heart and hope they become integrated, what stage of development would you want to inject? That's basically your question, right? Yeah. So It's a good question, because adult myocytes are very fragile cells. They're very big cells, but very fragile cells. You're probably not going to have very good survival if you were to try to inject those cells, even by the gentlest of means, into the damaged heart. But on the other hand, you wouldn't want to inject the earliest stem cell either, because that would probably go on to make a tumor if you were to inject, say, an embryonic stem cell itself. It certainly is the case with mouse embryonic stem cells injected in. Now, so somewhere in between there is where you want to be. There is abundant evidence that taking fetal myocytes, cardiomyocytes, and injecting them into the damaged heart will lead to functional integration. Similarly, others have shown that if you take human ES-derived or mouse ES-derived cardiomyocytes and fetal-like myocytes and inject them in, they will become integrated. The myocytes that we all show you when we make cardiomyocytes out of ES cells are very, very immature. They're rhythmically beating, and that's a sign of immaturity. So that's a good thing on the one hand in that they probably will become integrated. You, of course, have to ensure their maturation, because rhythmic beating, foci of rhythmic beating, as any cardiologist will tell you, in the ventricle of the heart is a very bad thing. Of course, it'd be arrhythmogenic. Functional integration is essential. Maybe the young cells can integrate. These are tremendous hurdles to overcome. The simple answer is an immature myocyte. The complex answer is you've got to get it to integrate properly.
Could you just hang on a second, because you, as I said before, nobody will hear this. And if you switch it on, it'll work better.
Hello?
Okay. Sorry, Roger. Yeah, have you tried your constitutively activated notch cells in any kind of like a, you know, sort of clinical mimic paradigm? And you know, for looking at myosin heavy chain expression in these sort of immature cardiomyocytes, do they typically go on to, you know, form the you know, like cardiac muscle like morphologies?
Yes. So the immature myocytes, yes, will go on and mature and integrate. I mean, we have shown, and others, that they will, the ES, human ES-derived myocytes will go through a maturation process roughly on schedule. They will form ventricular action potentials. They'll develop channel properties consistent with being more mature myocytes. The notch treatment holds them, sort of prevents that process. Too much notch over too long a period is probably a bad thing for the cells, especially the way we've delivered it in an unregulated way. So in order to test whether we can use the notch signaling to expand the population, I think we need to deliver it in a much more benign way, and I think that will take delivering it either from outside the cell or in a tightly regulated way, and we're working on that. Yes?
One more question.
Just to follow up on that last point, presumably you mean that it would be sensitive to a gamma secretase inhibitor then, so you could turn it off if you needed to.
Yes. So you would want to be able to, notch is regulated at many, many points. And I think that if we have an unregulated expression of notch, it would not be conducive to resumption of normal differentiation. So we would want to have it stimulate the activity in some way that we could turn it off. If the simplest way would be to provide a ligand and have that ligand disappear after a period of time, for instance. But there are many other ways that you could consider it. But I think the point being you would want to regulate it, and if you activate it, the higher up in the pathway, probably the better you are. But I don't know that yet. Okay. Thank you.